All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So our shiur tonight is sponsored by Mr. and Mrs. Robert and Delia Ben in commemoration of the yard site of Mrs. Ben's father, Tzvi Ben Aaron, Zichrono Livracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an aliyah and the family a nechama. And with that, let's begin. So I want to open up tonight with the beginning of Parshas Tetzaveh. So the Torah says as follows. Remember, again, these parshios, Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Pekudei, all focus on the same general theme, ultimately of the construction, first of all, construction of the Mishkan, construction, fabrication of the utensils, and creation of the Big Day Kahuna, the Kohanic vestments. So with one exception, beginning of Parashas Tetzaveh, number one, Vata Tetzaveh Bnei Yisrael, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, shall command the Jewish people, V'yichu Eilecha Shemen Zayis Zoch Kassis Lama'ar, and they shall bring to you clear olive oil, made from olives that were crushed for lighting, Laha'alos Ner Tomid, to keep the menorah burning constantly. Bi'o'al Moed Michutz LaParoches Asher Ala'idus, Yaruch Osa Aron Ubanav Me'erev Ad Boker Lefnei Hashem, Chukas Olam L'Dorosam Me'es B'nei Yisrael. So the Torah over here outlining the obligation for Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead and collect from the Jewish people olive oil. What's the olive oil used for? To go ahead and fuel the menorah so that it would remain lit at all times. Not literally at all times, but throughout the day, throughout the night, in the Mishkan and later on in the Beis HaMikdash. So many of the commentaries focus on this particular verse because it appears that it is out of place. This week's parasha, Parshas Tetzaveh, really heavily focuses on the Big Day Kahuna, the Kohanic clothing. The collection of olive oil, one would have thought, actually more belongs where? In last week's parasha, Truma. Because it was in last week's parasha that the Torah goes into great detail regarding the gold, and the silver, and the copper, and all the different types of wool, and purple wool, red wool, all different. That I would have put olive oil there. Yet olive oil is seemingly singled out and placed in Parashas Tetzaveh. That's not what we're going to focus on. Instead, what we're going to focus on is something a bit more nuanced and technical. If you look at the verbiage over here in number one, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, Ve'ato tetzaves b'nei Yisrael, you shall command the Jewish people, v'ikhu eilecha shemen zayis zach, and they will take to you olive oil. Contrast this with the wording of collection that we found in last week's parasha. Take a look at number two, the opening pasuk from Parshas Teruma. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe leimor, daber al bnei Yisrael v'yikhu li truma, me'is kol ish asher yidvenu libo, tikhu es teruma si. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, saying, speak to the Jewish people, and they shall take for me a truma for every person whose heart impels him, whose heart compels him to give. So notice, in last week's parasha, the Torah uses a much simpler wording. Speak to the Jewish people and ask them to donate. We would have expected the same verbiage here as well. Vaydaber Hashem Moshe leimor, daber al bnei Yisrael, v'yikhu li shemen zayis zach. Speak to the Jewish people and go ahead and collect for me pure olive oil. But it doesn't say that. The Torah uses a much stronger wording. Va'ata titzave es b'nei Yisrael. What does titzave mean?
Command.
Tzivui. You should command the Jewish people, and they should v'yikhu eilecha, they should collect for you shemen zayis zach, pure olive oil. Pure olive oil. So what's happening over here? There's obviously, okay, yes, on the most basic level, there's a collection of olive oil. But the fact that the Torah changes its wording in such a dramatic way tells us that there is something else here which is unfolding. So I want to share with you two approaches for tonight, which we're going to see really kind of meld one into the other. If you take a look at number three, so the Alshich writes as follows. The Alshich, Rav Moshe Alshich, you could see, born in Turkey in 1507, dies sometime around 1593. So the Alshich writes as follows. He's buried in the old cemetery in Tzfas. So the Alshich writes as follows. V'zostia kavanas aksuvim, v'hine v'hu, ki hine ein safek ki achare ra'os Moshe's kol ma'aseh ha'mishkan kinorohu la'asos lo mikdash lishkon ko'alokim besochenu ve'yitzaves amo yichuli truma. So the Alshich says something amazing. All of last week's Parsha Moshe Rabbeinu is preoccupied with a collection. And remember again, who gives to the Mishkan? Who gives to the Mishkan? Everyone gives to the Mishkan, with one notable exception, which was who? Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Even Aaron, although Aaron doesn't give, Aaron is conscripted into the service of the Kohuna. He serves in the Mishkan. Everyone has a role in the Mishkan, except for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't donate anything. Moshe Rabbeinu, again, doesn't really have a working role in the Mishkan. This is very important to note. Because although Moshe Rabbeinu serves almost as like the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, during the days of the inauguration of the Mishkan, remember, again, that was a one-time thing. After that's over, Aaron's inducted, Moshe Rabbeinu is out. So the Alshich raises something amazing. The Alshich says that Moshe Rabbeinu was sad and depressed. Here, something amazing is occurring. Something dramatic is occurring, and I don't have a role in it. And I don't have a place in it. I'm not one of the major donors. I don't have a dramatic service role. And something so beautifully holy is happening all around me, and yet it has absolutely nothing to do with me. Says the Alshich in number 4, So says the Alshich, that's the meaning of the verbiage in number 1. God is addressing Moshe Rabbeinu's feelings of inadequacy. Moshe, you feel inadequate because you didn't donate. Moshe, you feel inadequate because you're not like Aaron serving in the Beis HaMikdash, or in the Mishkan, excuse me. Va'ata, Moshe, I want you to understand how incredibly and dramatically important your role is. Kimagbia kol. It's as if God was raising his voice. V'omer, and he said, V'ata Moshe, al tochush, do not be upset. Ki chelkicha gadol mikulam. Your portion is greater than everyone else's. Ki halo shleimos kulam al yad chohu. Because Moshe, they only become great through you. They only become great through you. Ki al yidei ma sha'ata tetzave el tzbnei Yisrael b'chol mitzos. So listen to this. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, you know, something dramatically amazing. Moshe, what you don't understand is that you are like the oil for the Jewish people. What does that mean? You see, the oil by itself is not so wonderful. What's the greatness of the oil? That it creates luminescence for everyone else. The greatness of oil is not in that it burns. The greatness of oil is not even simply in that it creates light. The greatness of oil is that it enables others to see. It creates light, enabling others to see, enabling others to accomplish. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu is something absolutely amazing. Moshe, your role is the greatest of all roles. You are the enabler of other people's growth. It is true that at the end of the day, you're not one of the big donors. You're not even a small donor. We don't find that Moshe Rabbeinu contributed gold, silver, copper to the Beis HaMikdash, or to the Mishkan. It is true, Moshe, that at the end of the day, you are not going to be the Kohen Gadol. It's true, Moshe. You are not going to have a role like the regular Jews, nor will you have a role like Karma. Moshe, what are you? Va'ata! Moshe, do you know what you are? Titzaves b'nei Yisrael v'ikhu elecha. You know what you are? Shemen zayis zach. You're the olive oil of Klal Yisrael. You're the fuel for the engine. You are the oil which creates the light. HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling Moshe Rabbeinu, your role is even greater than everyone else, for you are the enabler of other people's growth. And the Alshich is teaching us something incredibly amazing. We very often think that the greatest accomplishments we have in this world are the things we do for ourselves and the things we do for others. I learned a certain amount. I gave a certain amount of tzedakah. I performed these acts of chasadim. I did something nice for someone else. And those are all incredible. But understand, when you become the enabler of someone else's growth, your one action becomes a force multiplier. Your one action suddenly enables the growth of so many around you. That growth of others that is enabled through you is credited towards you, to you. Understand, Moshe Rabbeinu is not the first example of this. Who's the first example of this? Avram Avinu. You know, one of the strangest psukim in the Torah is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram Avinu that your offspring are going to be kikochve hashamayim, like the stars of the sky, or like the sand on the shore. Just like no one could count the granules of sand, no one could go ahead and count the offspring of Avram Avinu. And whenever you look at that pasuk, you say to yourself, is it true? It's not true. We're Avram Avinu's offspring. The truth is, I don't know what fraction of a percent we are on humanity, right? Very little. We probably don't even show up, right? We're not even a rounding error. So what does that mean? When Mashiach comes, we're going to be like the stars of the sky? There's no such promise like that. That as much as people, even Congress people, like to tweet that the Jews are taking over the world, right? At the end of the day, we haven't, and that's not our intention, right? That's not our mandate. That's not our destiny. Even when Mashiach comes, remember, you want any of the most amazing halacha when Mashiach comes? You know, when Mashiach comes, no more converts. We won't accept converts in the days of Mashiach, right? Because again, what is that? What does that tell you? What that tells you is we're not a proselytizing religion. We're not trying to take over the world. We're not trying to take over humanity. We don't need to make everyone like us because we believe we have our mission. The rest of humanity has its mission. But yet God tells Avraham Avinu that your offspring are going to be like the stars in the sky, like the dust on the earth. So what's the pshat? So the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzidron, says something amazing. He says Avraham Avinu's offspring are like the stars of the sky, because I have news for you. We like to think Avram Avinu is only our Zayda, but it's not true. Avram Avinu is the father of every major faith. Avram Avinu is the father, ultimately again, of Judaism. He's also the father, so to speak, of Christianity and of Islam. Everyone traces their roots back to Avram Avinu. We could disagree about what God is, how to worship God, but at the end of the day, think about this just a moment. The three major religions all trace themselves back to an Abrahamic ancestor. Isn't that incredible? So the Kaddish Baruch Hu is saying Avram Avinu is, Avram, you know what your greatest accomplishment is? You are the enabler for the growth of others. You are the one who sets the foundation, ultimately again, for the growth of others. And this idea has so many dramatic concepts. You know, I always try to stay away from discussions regarding gender roles because they never end well, right? They never, somebody's always angry about something. But you know, I'll just tell you, just without getting into, because, and a lot of times we're influenced also by greater society and we find this conflict between Judaic roles, societal roles. But again, I want to tell you something amazing. Just speaking to a group of Jewish women, you should understand that the hallmark of the Jewish woman is not found in just her personal accomplishments, but at the end of the day, it's her ability to be the enabler of the growth of all of those around her. You know, the Maharal discusses this idea. He says, why is it that women are pater? They're exempt from so many mitzvos. Okay, so I know you've heard women are holier. It's all wonderful, beautiful. Right? On a real, really, why are women exempt from mitzvos? Women are so much more precise and so much more detail-oriented. Right? If they had the obligations, they would probably execute it 10 times better. Why? Because what's a mitzvah? A mitzvah is a vehicle for your personal growth. I put on tefillin because ultimately, again, it is necessary for my personal growth. The mandate of a woman, again, this is not our topic, I'm just sharing because I think it's an incredible idea, is not to be focused on personal growth. It's to be focused on enabling the growth of everyone around her. And by the way, this doesn't just apply if you're married. This doesn't just apply, ultimately, again, if you have a mishpacha. This apparently is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt was in the DNA of the woman. This ability, ultimately, again, to actualize the potential of everyone around her. And again, this was Sarah Imenu. Sarah Imenu, we see again, whenever we hear about Sarah in the Torah, where is she? Where is she? She's in the tent. Well, what does that mean? Sarah Imenu was a powerhouse. We know that because at the end of the day, when Sarah dies, Avraham Avinu's dynamic activity stops. It stops. See, Avraham Avinu thinks he's changing the world. Sarah's figuring out how to enable everyone around her. How do I enable an Avram? How do I enable a Yitzchak? Even how do I enable Yishmael? Just Yishmael had to be enabled in a different way, not in the home. Being an enabler does not free you from the responsibilities of your own personal growth. Being an enabler of the growth of others does not say, don't worry about your own spiritual growth. Don't worry about your own spiritual development. Just be there for everyone else. Now, of course, every person has to make sure that they're growing as an individual. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe Rabbeinu something so dramatic. Moshe, the people are doing great stuff. They're donating. Aaron's doing great stuff. He's the Kohen Gadol. Moshe, you're the oil. You enable everyone around you to be better. And that means, Moshe, their growth is your growth. So the great irony is that Moshe Rabbeinu feels like he's missing out. Moshe Rabbeinu feels like a second-class citizen. Moshe Rabbeinu feels like he's been sidelined. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to him in a very strong wording. Va'ata, says the Al-Sheikh. It's like God is yelling at Moshe. Va'ata, you Moshe. Tetzaves b'nei Yisrael. V'ikhu eilecha shemen zayis zach kasis lama'or. La'alos ner tamid. Gather the olive oil, Moshe. Why does Moshe have to gather the olive oil? Why? Well, let someone else gather the olive oil. Because you're the oil of Klal Yisrael. You're the enabler for their light. You're the enabler for their growth. And I think, again, this is such an incredibly profound idea. Because so often in life, we become so hyper-focused on personal growth that we forget that sometimes the greatest accomplishments in life are not the things you do for yourself. And they're not even the form of growth that is actualized within you. That sometimes our greatest moments of accomplishment are when we enable those around us to find their greatness and to become even better. The greatest moments of growth in life is when you begin to go ahead and recognize yourself as that beautiful, luminescent olive oil that has the ability to introduce light into the lives of everyone around you. That's the Al-Sheikh. I'll share with you an incredibly, kind of dovetailing a little bit. You'll see, not dramatically different, but a little bit of a different spin. Skip for a moment to number 8. So in the Be'era Parsha, this is by the son of the Lulavah Rebbe, he says something really beautiful. He says, "V'parsha son, in our Parsha, Ba'ata titzaves b'nei Yisrael, v'ikhoi lecha shemen zayis azach." So the Be'era Parsha quotes over here from the Chassan Sofer. The Chassan Sofer was the grandson of the Chassam Sofer. So he says, "L'farish adas ha-musar, Dirabu hamiskashim umisnasim emeseches yisurim koshev astara kochad v'chad v'dilei. So ultimately, again, what the Chassan Sofer does, and it's a longer piece, not going to do all of it, but he says, you know, we all have those moments in life when we say to ourselves, like, why me? Why me? We all have our challenges. Some of us have acute challenges. Some of us have, you know, the truth is everybody's challenge is acute. You know, it's always an important idea. Sometimes when you're encountering a challenge, a well-meaning person might try to show you how there are people who have greater challenges than you, right? You know, there are children starving in Africa. I know there are children starving in Africa, and my heart breaks the fact that there are children starving in Africa. But my problem is still my problem, right? We know when you have a problem, when you have a challenge, it's big. And even though I know intellectually that someone else has a bigger problem, or that, of course, it can always be worse, my challenge is still my challenge. My problem is still my problem. That's why sometimes when people try to give consolation to people by telling them to focus on their brachos, so it's a very nice thought, and it's good. It's always good to contextualize things, but my pain is my pain. My challenge is my challenge. So says the Chassan Sofer, sometimes we look at our lives and we wonder just like, why? Why? And I know more often than not that is a question that's not going to be answered, at least not in this life. But I wonder, like, why? Why is all of this stuff happening to me? Why is this challenge occurring to me? Why do I have to deal with this particular adversity? And sometimes that question is compounded, especially if you feel like you're living a life in accordance with the Word of God. I'm doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of me, and I don't even ask even for that much in return. I just want things to be regular. I just want things to be normal, whatever normal means. I just would like a little bit less adversity. And so the Chassan Sofer says something beautiful. If you skip down a little bit in the right-hand paragraph, it's still in number 8, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom of the right-hand paragraph. Right after the period, So the truth is, the case study in this why me dynamic is Moshe Rabbeinu, right? How so? Listen to this. Kimi lanu gadol mimeno. Who is greater than Moshe? And of course, again, the answer is no one's greater than Moshe. As the Torah itself testifies, lo kam b'Yisrael kemoshe od. There will never and has never been a prophet like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is one of a kind. And yet what? And yet what? V'im kol zos hayemuna umeduka b'Yisurim shonim kol yamav. And yet, amazingly enough, Moshe, I was really taken by this because I never thought about it like this before. Moshe Rabbeinu has challenges from birth. From birth. His life was one ongoing set of challenges. Dimiyom hi valdoa ba'al paro, nisnase b'yisurim shonim u'mushunim, lo avrugim l'chadashim yalduso, hukvar hushlach ha'yara. So remember again, where did Moshe Rabbeinu's challenges start? 3 months old. 3 months old, what happens? His mother puts him in a basket, sets him afloat on the Nile. Misham nilkach acher kavod liskad al birkei paro arasha. Then he's raised in the Pharaoh's home. Again, not the home of his choosing. He's a foster child of the Pharaoh. Not the life of his choosing. Not the chinuch of his choosing. Nothing of his choosing. Then what happens? Lachar kach chutzrach livrach v'lazov his beis aviv v'achiv b'nei Yisrael lemigan. Then what happens? When he begins to identify with his Jewish brothers, what occurs? Remember the story. What occurs? His brothers turn on him. Right? He tries to break up a fight between two Jews. And they say, we know what you did to the Egyptian. And again, essentially threaten to turn him into the authorities. So again, placed in the Nile at the age of 3 months. Raised in a foster home, not of his choosing. His own brothers turn on him. He goes to Midian. V'gam sham. Lo yoshev b'chvodo shel olam, kimo sha'am en amar, ki ger ha'yisi be'eretz nachriya, left-hand paragraph. And then he goes to Midian. And what happened? And what happened to Midian? What happened to Midian? Right? What happens in Midian is he's a stranger in a strange land. We know that because how does he name his oldest child? Gershom. Right? Ki ger ha'yisi, I was a stranger in a strange land. He didn't have some grandeur or some covet in Midian. He's a stranger. He doesn't belong. V'gam shekvar nisman aliyos manhigon shal Yisrael. Omar, od ma'at uskaluni. So then you'll think, you know what? Then Moshe Rabbeinu was appointed leader for the Jewish people. And it's a lifetime contract. Fantastic. What a shtala, right? What a job. What an opportunity. And what is it? They hate him. They hate him. They trample upon him. This is it's very uncomfortable to say, because Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, the Klal Gadol, we've talked about this before. Great people become great when they die. That's when great people become great. It's like an amazing thing. It's the same way, you know, you go to a levaya, and what happens when they take the mace, when they take the casket out? Everybody stands up. So when that person was alive, they treat him like garbage, right? When the person is alive, they'll talk about him like this. Now he's dead, suddenly everybody stands up. Why? Because Jews have great respect for Judaica, don't have as much respect for fellow Jews. When someone dies and they're in a casket, they're Judaica. Everybody respects Judaica. You stand up for Judaica. Jews, unfortunately, we take plenty of liberties with each other's covet. Moshe Rabbeinu lo kam b'Yisrael kemoshe od. Moshe Rabbeinu, okay. And we see, it's not a secret. How do we treat him? How did our grandparents, how did our ancestors treat Moshe Rabbeinu? Not very well. Not very well. So Moshe Rabbeinu, again, can you understand what this means? From the age, remember again, the first time Klal Yisrael appreciates Moshe Rabbeinu, literally, after he dies, everyone begins to cry. At every single step of the 40-year journey, they're ready to lynch Moshe Rabbeinu. They're ready to get rid of him. They can't stand him. They think he sabotaged the whole thing. Then he dies, they cry because they realize what they lost. Do you understand what this means? From the age of 3 months until 120, Moshe Rabbeinu's life was one of ongoing, consistent challenge. 3 months until 120. Ongoing difficulty, adversity, and challenge. What happens? The Chasan Sofer says, Aval kol zeh lo hayo letavaso. Ki mikol elu nivne lihios Moshe Rabbeinu av l'neviim. But here says the Chasan Sofer something amazing. It's only through the adversity and the challenges that you encounter in life, it's those things that make you who you are. We all know that the most difficult reality to wrap our heads around is that it is not our simchas and successes that make us who we are. It's our failures, our challenges, and our adversity. It's the difficulties in life and how we manage them. That is what solidifies and concretizes our spiritual personality. The brachos are wonderful. The good times are fantastic. The blessings, halavai, should be abundant. But no one becomes righteous and refined as a result of abundant life blessing. People become righteous and refined by how they decide to deal with life's setback and adversity. And who is the greatest example of that? Moshe Rabbeinu. You see, sometimes we like to think that Moshe Rabbeinu became great despite his life adversity. And the Chasan Sofer says that is unequivocally false. Moshe Rabbeinu became great because of his life adversity. Without those challenges, which began at the age of 3 months, Moshe Rabbeinu would have been just another guy. He would have been just another face in the crowd. It's only because of the challenges, only because of the adversity, that he became great. And by the way, when you begin to realize this, you begin to see something absolutely amazing. Do you know that every single one of our great personalities in the Torah all share one common trait, and that is difficult lives. There is not one personality in our Torah. Not one. You know, Tanakh is a little bit different because there you do have people who had wonderful lives and were still righteous. But when you look at our primary figures in Chumash, not one of our great people had an easy life. All of the Avos and Imos had incredible and overwhelming struggles. Moshe Rabbeinu has his struggles. Yoshua has his struggles. Sipora has her struggles. Everyone has struggles. Moshe Rabbeinu, again, did you ever think about this before? From the age of 3 months until 120, struggle after struggle after struggle after struggle. But it's not that he became great despite the struggles. Even though, yes, such a difficult and challenging life, amazing how you still manage it. No, it was the challenges that made him great. It was the adversity. It was that life tension that caused him ultimately to self-actualize, says the Chasan Sofer. That is the message of the opening pasuk of the parasha. Listen to this. He says, "Aval kol ze lo yotavaso ki mikol eile nivne lihios Moshe Rabbeinu av l'neviim." It was dafka because of all the adversity that Moshe Rabbeinu grows and becomes the father of all prophets. V'zocha mashalo zocha yilot isha me'olam lios kama pamim mem yom b'shamayim ulekabala Torah mepi agvura. Ultimately, again, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to accomplish things that mere mortals cannot accomplish. He spent more than 40 days in the celestial sphere, being more angelic than man. He spoke to God face to face. How did you accomplish all of this? It wasn't despite the challenges in adversity, but it was because of the challenges in adversity. They caused him to grow. They caused him to become great. Look at the last paragraph on the left-hand side. And says the Chasan Sofer, this is the deeper meaning in the verse. Al todasecha umaoros chayecha. Hema mitzuvim umalamdim libnei Yisrael. So listen to this. So says the Chasan Sofer in a very novel interpretation of the pasuk. Va'ata tetzave means Moshe. I need you to command. Command what? I need you to teach. Tetzave can also mean instruction. It doesn't just have to mean to teach. It can mean a tzivui is not only a command, but it's an instruction. V'yata tetzave. Moshe, I want you to teach the people how to lead successful lives. I want you to teach the people how to lead successful lives. So how do you lead successful lives? V'omer lahem. The next phrase, how do you lead successful lives? Moshe, I want you to instruct the people how to lead successful lives. Moshe, they should take from you. They should learn from you. They should take a message from you, Moshe. Moshe, you are the paradigmatic example of successful living. How is Moshe, you know, a paradigmatic example of successful living? Watch this. Shemen Zayas. Because Moshe, you have taught us that a person is like olive oil. How is a person like olive oil? Sha'adam hariu kishemen zayis ukidisa b'medrash she'ein shemen zayis yotze ella al yidei kitisha. Here's something amazing. How do you get olive oil? You have to crush the olives. Olive, you could have the most beautiful, succulent olives, fantastic, but if they just sit there, you get nothing from it. It's only when you squeeze them, it's only when you press them, it's only when you apply pressure, and the more pressure, what happens? The more oil, right? The more you squeeze them, right? The tighter the squeezing of the olives, the more you get out of them. He says something amazing. Olive oil only comes out through the crushing of the olive. Kach adam, kishemeducha biyisurin naase zach kadosh v'tar kasis, kishekoshin oso od yoser hainu lamaar. You know that the incredible difficult lesson of life is how do you get light out of us? Through pressure. Through crushing. Sometimes the greatest light only comes when you press the olives. Without the tension, without the challenge, the oil doesn't come out. And if the oil doesn't come out, then there's nothing to ignite. There's nothing to create luminescent beauty. Says the Chasan Sofer, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe Rabbeinu. V'ata tetzave Moshe, your job is not just simply to give them the laws of the Torah. Your job is to instruct them on how to live successfully. How do you live successfully? V'ikhu elecha, Moshe, they have to learn from you. They have to learn the story of your life lesson, or they have to learn your life lesson. What's your life lesson? Shemen zayis zach kasis lamaar la'alos ner tamid. Take pure, beautiful oil that comes from crushed olives and use it to ignite and to illuminate something beautiful. The lesson of Moshe Rabbeinu's life is that light comes from adversity. Our greatness doesn't come out despite our challenges, but our greatness comes out because of our challenges. We are the olives, and you only get the oil out of the olives with pressure, with stress, with difficulty, and sometimes with crushing circumstances. I want to be clear. This is not a pleasant lesson to learn. This is not an enjoyable lesson. Right? No one says, okay, great, bring it on. Right? I'm ready for my olives to be crushed so I can light up the world. But you know, there are a lot of things in life that we don't like, but just because we don't like them doesn't mean they're not true. And here HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe Rabbeinu to teach Kal Yisrael probably the most difficult, but the most important life lesson. We become great people, not despite our difficult circumstances, but because of how we deal with our difficulties. The oil only comes out when you crush the olives. The luminescent holiness is only created through weathering the adversity and difficulties in life. And this is incredibly important. Because what this tells us is that when we face challenges in life, you know, we speak about this very often, that very often in life, I can't choose my circumstances. The only thing I can choose is my disposition. I choose my outlook. So when I find myself faced by challenge, no matter how much I krechts, or no matter how much, that's Latin for whining, right? No matter how much I krechts, or no matter how much I bemoan or lament my fate, woe is me, why me, which are legitimate questions to ask, that's not going to change anything. Instead, what Moshe Rabbeinu tells us, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us is, when you're looking challenge in your face and you say, you know what? I mamish feel like I'm being crushed. I mamish feel like I'm sitting underneath a 10,000 pound weight that's sitting on my heart, that's sitting on my soul. I literally feel like the circumstances of life are bringing me to my knees and I don't know how I'm going to weather the storm. In that moment, says Moshe Rabbeinu, yes, you're right. You're being crushed. But you know what comes out of being crushed? Shemen Zayis Zach. You know what comes out of adversity? The purest of what you are. You know what comes out of challenge? Not just some personality traits. The most refined and holy part of who and what you are. That part of that you discover through the crushed olives, that part that you discover through adversity, if you channel that energy, that'll light up your life and it'll light up the life of all those around you. I want to end off this year by sharing with you something absolutely amazing. This was actually a news story that I saw. I'm just going to read to you. It's a short article, but I think it fits into this motif in such an incredible way. It's the title of the article is Beautiful Disaster. Head injury reveals hidden talent. I'm just going to read it to you. It's short. A bang to the head changed a Colorado man's life by revealing a hidden talent. Doctors say concert performer Derek Amato is one of the few people in the world to have experienced the rare phenomenon called acquired savant syndrome. He says the music is in his mind. He sees it in his head and his fingers do the rest. Amato has a gift that came about in an unexpected way. Listen to this story. 12 years ago, he had an accident in a swimming pool. I miscalculated diving in the shallow end and hit the bottom of the shallow end on this side of my head and damaged the back end, said Amato. After recovering from the incident, he was at a friend's house and walked over to the keyboard and suddenly, without ever playing the piano before, he began playing and playing. The trauma to the head unlocked something unique inside Amato's brain. Acquired savant syndrome has been described in articles and studies as when a tragedy turns you into a genius. At Classic Pianos on South Broadway in Denver, Amato told CBS's that black and white squares appear in his mind when he's at the piano. I just follow what the blocks tell me to do. I do my best to take those notes and put them into playing, said Amato. His talented arms are tattooed with musical notes, which he cannot comprehend. Reading music seems confusing for me. I tried to learn a couple of different times. He says, despite not being able to read music, he's aware that he has been given a precious gift and tries to give back to those who have spent hard times on the streets of Denver, as he once did. Amato has written a book about his experience called My Beautiful Disaster. An incredible idea. An incredible metaphor. Obviously, this is an amplified example. Acquired avant syndrome. Sometimes, again, the head injury reveals hidden talent. And the truth is, even if your life challenges are not going to endow you with the ability to become a concert pianist, at the end of the day, this happens to all of us. When we undergo challenge, there is something we find in ourselves that we never knew we had. When you crush the olives, oil flows out that I never knew was there. I never knew that it existed before. I never saw it. I never thought I could do this. I never thought this were my capabilities. And I want to be clear. There is not one person here who looks forward to challenge. There is not one person here who davens for challenge. There is not one person here who eagerly awaits challenge. But there is not one person here who will be spared from challenge. So the only shaila, the only variable, the only question is, what are you going to do when challenge shows up at your doorstep? Are you going to lament it, bemoan it, complain about it? Or are you going to say, you know what? I feel crushed under the weight of these enormous circumstances. But if I'm being crushed, that means the oil of my potential is going to flow out. I look forward to finding that oil. I look forward to seeing that oil. And I look forward from this challenge to learning more about myself and learning what I am truly capable of accomplishing. So in one little opening pasuk of Parashas Tetzaveh, V'yata Tetzaveh es b'nei Yisrael v'ikhu elecha shemen zayis zach kasis lama'or la'alos ner tamid. HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches us through Moshe Rabbeinu two dramatic life lessons. The greatest accomplishments in life are often not the things you do for yourselves, but rather it is your ability to be the luminescent oil which lights up the life of another. Enable people around you to be great. Enable your friends to be great. Enable your family to be great. Enable your community to be great. And your enabling of others to find and actualize their potential will be infinitely greater than anything you could ever accomplish on your own. And lesson number two, which is a lesson gleaned from Moshe Rabbeinu's life. Life is filled with challenges. And when challenge occurs, and the olives of my persona feel like they're being crushed, be on the lookout for the potential that is sure to follow. Be on the lookout for the new things that you are going to figure out and learn about yourself. Use that newfound oil. Use those newfound abilities and those newfound kochos to do something great for yourself and the world around you. We'll stop over here for tonight.
Younger, they say, you know, when they